I just find it fascinating that so many of the issues that are out there right now are based on this false notion that men and women are completely interchangeable.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I mean, all these really hot-button issues are based on some confusion about where men and women are equal, in what terms are they equal, and then, you know, most importantly, how are we different, and is that difference a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, what does God have to say about these differences, and, you know, how should the Christian think about these differences? So I am so excited to come to this conference and talk about these issues, which animate so much of our political and social and cultural discourse, and also the things we struggle with in the church as well.
You can meet and hear Molly Ziegler-Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Marilyn Monroe in her life is an image for the way in which the sexual revolution is promoted as this wonderful thing, but all the problems are airbrushed out.
To a stranger who walks in, who doesn't know all the same 30 praise choruses that are currently hot on the pop charts, that can be as off-putting and intimidating as someone walking into a Greek Orthodox church and having the whole service be in Greek.
So we can say, when we look at the manifestation of tongues where people lose control of themselves, that it is clearly an evidence not of the presence of the Holy Spirit, but of the absence of the Holy Spirit.
Confessional Lutheran Deadheads love Issues Etc.
Well, when you think about media coverage of religion, you don't usually think about media coverage of atheism, although in all the religious surveys, atheism is a viewpoint that is considered, oddly enough, a religious orientation or a religious viewpoint. So how have the new atheists been covered by the media? Not only the new atheists, but this emerging new crop of atheists that are newer than the new atheists, that are threading the needle a little more carefully, that perhaps are a little less hostile to Christianity, but nonetheless would qualify as atheists. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, June the 12th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about media coverage of atheism with Richard Osling, a longtime religion writer for the Associated Press and Time magazine. A little bit later, James Buscher will join us. We'll remember, as the church does on this day, the Council of Nicaea. Chris Roseborough joins us for This Week in Pop American Christianity, and we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week in the last half hour of the program. We'll play the soundbites. You vote, and then we'll give away the LPR bundle package, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote in advance for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about media coverage of atheism, Richard Osling. He's a longtime religion writer for the Associated Press and Time magazine, a recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award of the Religion News Writers Association, and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Richard, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
You talk about an atheist chic in media coverage over the last decade or so. What do you mean by that?
Well, as you mentioned, we've had some big bestsellers by particularly four atheistic authors, and these are generally called new atheists because they have a take-no-prisoners approach, very caustic, very aggressive against all religious faiths. And in addition, I think we've seen more pleasant, soft feature stories in the media about atheists forming congregations or, you know, carrying on other activities. Of course, political activism is very much part of, you know, filing lawsuits against Under God and the Pledge of Allegiance and on and on. So, yeah, I think it's been a good decade for atheists in terms of media attention.
Well, I can understand, because novelty makes for news, I can understand this going on a year or two, especially if the books are timed right by the publishers to kind of build upon one another. But it seems as though we're past the novelty stage on atheism in the media, aren't we?
Yes, although we have to remember this new, very important Pew Research Center, quote, religious landscape study just out tells us that atheists are now 3.1% of the U.S. adult population. Now, that compares with an identical survey 2007. It was only 1.6. So basically, the chunk of American adults who consider themselves to be atheists has doubled in just those years since 2007. By the way, agnostics a bit larger. They come out at 4% of American adults.
Is that distinction made well enough in the media, the distinction between atheist, which tends to be kind of the hardline position, and the agnostic?
I generally think so, yeah. And I think those terms are pretty well understood. At least for, you know, people who pay attention to religious stuff. I mean, it's an interesting question. And I'm sure there are atheists who lean to agnosticism. I'm sure there are agnostics who lean toward atheism. We're dealing sort of with a spectrum here. And then, of course, the big news out of that Pew survey is the growing contingent of Americans who are just not interested. They say, "What's your religion?" They say, "Nothing in particular." I mean, they don't even have enough interest to define themselves as atheists or agnostics.
Has the media properly covered the religious response to the new atheists?
Yes, I think that's a weakness in the media. In my piece in Get Religion, I suggest that it's time for a second stage in this whole thing. Now, part of this, to be fair to the media, is that those atheistic books really sold very well, got a lot of attention, and as I mentioned, they had a new attitude of spiky hostility toward religion rather than the tolerant kind of attitude. Anyway, but there's some very important books from the God side of the matter that really haven't got much attention, not only as kind of, you know, feature stories, but even in book review sections and periodicals, that really haven't given much attention to these folks. And they've dealt with the identical questions that are raised by their atheistic challengers. I may just mention a couple of these. David Bentley Hart, who is Eastern Orthodox, is out with Atheist Delusions. Alistair McGrath over in Oxford, England, is interesting because he used to be an atheist, and he has a doctorate in biology. So Alistair McGrath is interesting in, for instance, Dawkins' God and Twilight of Atheism. Then on the American side, we have Alvin Plantinga at Notre Dame, Where the Conflict Really Lies, which goes into this whole science versus religion business. Another Brit is Richard Swinburne, whose books include Is There a God and Mind and Cosmos. The problem we have, to be frank, is that these are high-flying books. They're very rich, hard to summarize quickly, you know, in a newspaper context and so on. To their credit, those atheistic authors pretty good at racy, quotable verbiage, and, you know, so they're pretty good at publicizing their beliefs, or should we say their non-beliefs.
With regard to one particular, I think, a rather bright light in the media himself, you have some quotes from an interview between Charles Krauthammer and Bill Kristol. What did you find out there?
Yeah, interesting. Kristol has online extensive interviews that run as long as 2 hours, really dig into stuff. He did one with Krauthammer, who, of course, is a major, if not the major, conservative columnist and pundit, won the Pulitzer Prize some years ago, and has sold over 1 million copies of his book, Things That Matter. So he's a very interesting figure. Now, he is non-religious. He says, quote, "Faith is a gift and I don't have it." But he disputes some press accounts claiming he's an atheist. He thinks atheism is the most illogical or least likely option because there's a lot of things in the real physical world out there, which, if we're honest, we simply cannot explain. And he also, looking back in the past, says some of the greatest minds in history believed in God. So that urges him toward humility on whether God exists and how we define God, what his activities are. And he also advocates respect toward people who do believe in God. And, of course, that's a slap at the new atheists who have very little respect toward religious people.
Well, you say that's where the a storyline is really lurking, kind of exploring the question of is faith simply the realm of superstition, or if it's merely the matter of people holding to anachronistic traditions, things like that. How would you pursue it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, take the June 7th edition of the New York Times. There's an op-ed by two astrophysicists who announced to people like me who don't know much about this that science seems to be hitting a dead end, they say, because the latest theories and explanations of physical reality are not testable by their very nature. So that cuts totally against empirical science. You know, the idea that we can't believe in God or the supernatural because it's not visible or empirically testable, so on and so forth. So what they're saying is the cutting edge of science and the way things are heading, that's very much the case with physics and astronomy and so on. I mean, I have no way of knowing what they're talking about, to be honest, but it's certainly intriguing. I'd like to see a journalist dig into some of this.
When you talk, and you mentioned it before, about second stage of atheism, what are you talking about there, and how should the media go about doing that?
Yeah, so what I have in mind is that I really think the substance of the debate has been ignored. For instance, the new atheism might say, oh, you know, the church persecuted people in the 15th century, and we had the Inquisition, and we had the Crusades, and so on and so forth. So on the one hand, they ignore the horrible record of atheistic governments under the communist banner over the last century. I mean, we're talking about possibly 100 million calculated deaths and murders. I mean, you know, it's hard to top that. But that aside, or all the political stuff, you know, what's on the coins, or can we have a cross and a military cemetery and all the rest, what is the substance of the debate? What arguments are offered against the existence of God, and how are believers in God answering those, and what do they have to say for themselves? I really haven't seen good coverage of this, either in the print press or certainly radio television, which is pretty superficial, let's face it, or online essays that are journalistic, aimed at a broad audience.
The main obstacle then, as you said before, is perhaps that the responses, the considered responses, are require more of journalists than they're willing to put in to a story. Is that part of it?
Yes. I mean, journalists, especially today, are pretty harried. Staffs are shrinking. It takes a lot of time to wade through a number of philosophical kind of books and try to boil it down for the average reader. Over the years in my active career, I tried to do some of that, but it's hard, very hard. So I might throw in something that I did forget religion some months ago, and that is there still is a prejudice against atheists in society that explains some of the nasty tone by the atheistic writers. Specifically, the Gallup poll 2012, you know, said, would you vote for someone who is? And there's almost no opposition to a Hispanic, a Jewish, a Catholic, a female, or African-American president. 80% say we're fine with a Mormon. 58% are fine with a Muslim. But only 54% would accept atheists. In other words, an atheist as president of the United States is the least conceivable or the least popular of any of these kinds of categories or options that you might throw out there. So about half of the country would be uncomfortable with an openly atheistic president. And I think that's that explains some of the hostility and perhaps in some cases paranoia that atheists express in their writings.
I just got to ask you, in your opinion, you know, after a long career looking at that kind of thing, do you think it's possible in the near future, say the next 25 years, that there could be someone who could garner enough support to actually run as president as an atheist?
I think so, yeah. I think generally, you know, the society is getting more tolerant, certainly on unwed mothers, homosexuals, abortion, all these things that have, you know, marijuana smoking for recreational use, all of these things that have, you know, happened in the last generation. And, yeah, I think gradually that nervousness about an atheistic president is going to decline. But, you know, some people will still feel that. And with some, it may not be so much, oh, I'm a fervent believer in God, and therefore I oppose this person's outlook on life, but just kind of, well, they're a little different. They seem to be going out of their way to cause trouble or to be eccentric or whatever. I think it's more that kind of a thing. By the way, interesting reaction on from Russell Moore, the leader of the Southern Baptist Convention. He's talking about this Pew study showing how many people are not interested or involved. You know, my faith is nothing in particular. He says he'd rather have an honest atheist than one of these, you know, wishy-washy, couldn't-care-less type people. It's kind of interesting reaction.
Dick Ossling is a longtime religion writer for the Associated Press and Time magazine. He's a recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Religion News Writers Association, and he's a contributor to GetReligion.org. Dick, thanks for being our guest.
Sure, glad to help.
When we come back on this Friday afternoon, June the 12th, we'll talk the Council of Nicaea. The church is remembering this pivotal, very important event. Dr. James Buescher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio. First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas. Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama. And Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.